Technology has made the world a smaller place, but there is still so much we do not know. Every week, Postcards takes you on a trip of exploration and discovery. From a small village in Afghanistan to a protected cultural heritage site in South America. From Africa's amazing natural landscapes to the most advanced tech displays in the world. Postcards, where you meet the world without actually taking a trip. Postcards.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. South African breeders are working to fill a worldwide shortage of highly trained working dogs, including German Shepherds, Malinois, and Labradors. Breeding specialized dogs for mining, tracking, and detection is a science many are yet to perfect. But in Pretoria, the latest batch of puppy recruits are already in high demand. Here's Victor Ning with this postcard from South Africa.
They are just weeks old, but in under a year, these puppies are set to become highly trained specialists employed to sniff out explosives, narcotics, and other illegal substances. Mecum Dog Training Unit, which is part of South Africa's state-owned weapons company Danel, has started its own breeding program to keep up with the demand for its highly trained sniffer dogs. Hannes Slebert is the business unit manager of the Mecum Canine Unit.
Why we started a breeding program, because there's a shortage of good working dogs worldwide. You just don't find quality working dogs. And the numbers are just not, you can't buy them enough in South Africa. And that's why we decided to rather start our own dog breeding program.
He explains that breeding dogs for working purposes needs dedication from the start.
If you just breed dogs and leave them in kennels and there's no program, you don't stimulate them, especially from the 6th to the 12th week, that sensitive period, then they are just going to be, they're not going to develop. So you have to expose them to situations they will encounter during adulthood, and you must have an idea what you're going to utilize the dogs for. So they have to be exposed to that. Leaving a dog there just to fend for themselves and just grow up, they will not become successful dogs.
Elisna Zenner is a working dog breeder. She specializes in breeding Malinois, German Shepherd, and Beagle puppies. She says she can't keep up with the demand for her dogs. The three litters of puppies she has have already been bought, and future litters are also sold out in advance. Zenner's female German Shepherd, Bailey, was specially mated with one of Mecum's sniffer dogs that is currently working on the mining operations in Turkey. Bailey's litter has already started with basic training.
Well, at the moment we've got three litters. We've got beagles, puppies. They are less than a week old. They're really, really small. Then we've got Bailey's puppies. She's got 11 German Shepherd puppies. They're 4 weeks old. And then we've got Savannah's puppies. They're 6 weeks old. We're going to train them until 12 weeks, up to 12 weeks. And then Mecum or Braveheart take them further and do specialized training.
Zenner says one of the reasons her puppies are sought after is that they are played with and stimulated from a young age, which aids their development and confidence. Along with her dog handlers, she teaches them to fetch, search for their ball, and stay focused despite having various sounds as distractions. Not all puppies become successful working dogs, but Zenner says all the dogs in her last few litters have become successful narcotics or explosive detection dogs.
We have experienced from our last litters that if you handle the dogs correctly right from the start, we can use all of them. But then it means you need the facilities, you need to keep your eye on every single dog, you have to pay attention to detail. And then if you work on them individually, we had the experience that they were all successful, all able to be become either explosive or narcotic dogs, depending on the direction they are going, but they were all successful.
Zenner's well-bred and developed dogs come at a price. One Milanois puppy, for example, sells for $640. Not all dogs have to come from breeders. Sometimes trainers strike it lucky, like John Gravenstein did with Rambo, now a 10-week-old German Shepherd puppy that was brought to the Braveheart Bio Dog Academy by his owners. Gravenstein is an experienced dog trainer who started the academy in 1987.
We work with private companies internationally that need specialized services, explosive detection, substance detection dogs, also, for instance, tracking.
Dogs trained by Braveheart work all over Africa, in countries including Nigeria, Ghana, Gabon, DRC, Uganda, Mozambique, and Namibia. Gravenstein says the breeds with the highest success rate are the German Shepherd and Milanois.
We work with various breeds of dogs. We work with the German Shepherd, for instance. We work with the Belgian Malinois. The Belgian Malinois, a more slimline dog, very energetic dog with a high drive, working drive. The German Shepherd, very intelligent dog that can also be utilized for purposes of physical security more.
Gravenstein, who has a degree in genetics, is concerned with the unscientific way dog breeding is approached and plans to start his own breeding program by the end of the year.
It's very important to look at breeding and also start with the breeding program ourselves, due to the fact that the supply of dogs usually comes from people that reproduce dogs, not breed genetically and make selection on a scientific basis.
In the meantime, Zenner supplies dogs to both Meckham and Braveheart and other private security companies. For her, breeding is a full-time job, and she spends hours a day playing with the tiny working dogs in the making.
Well, breeding has its highs and its lows. Sometimes you have to really think with a sound mind the decisions you make that's best for the dogs and keep your heart out of it. Sometimes you get unexpected losses from puppies, not really knowing why, or injuries, and then you have to make the right choice. So that is some of the lows. But what is amazing is if you have a team that is loyal and trustworthy, which is really, really important, because you really need a team to make a success of a kennel, breeding and training.
A chance to hear what's new in China with local news, topical reports, lighthearted stories, and travel. It's China Horizons. Check out the changes sweeping China's provinces and explore the fascinating natural and man-made beauty of this ancient country, plus the culture, customs, and history of the nation's 55 minority groups. It's China Horizons.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. An Australian woman is offering a unique way for people to get closer to their pets by making clothes out of their fur. Marion Wheatland spins the hair the animal shed into yarn and makes everything from scarves to beanies and jumpers to keep people warm in winter. Here's Jo He Young with this postcard from Australia.
Famoyed dogs are some of the hairiest pets going. They need to be brushed weekly for a healthy, classy look. The weekly brush is a labor of love for Samoyed owner David Ewing.
It will take me roughly an hour and a half to complete, and that's to a point where he's quite presentable in the public.
For years, the Ewing family has simply thrown out the mounds of fur collected from their pet. While in the past, they've worn the fur on their clothes unintentionally. Now, it's set to become a fixture of their winter wardrobe.
This would be about two brushes worth. And this then will then turn into about, we would estimate, one of these.
The brains behind the project of turning pet fur into yarn is Marion Wheatland.
People wear jewelry with photos of their loved ones in the jewelry. Why don't you just wear your loved one on your body instead? So your loved one would be a vest or a scarf or a jacket or a hat.
Wheatland has been spinning yarn for 25 years, but recently discovered a niche market and has set up a business called Spinning Pets Yarn.
Other people think it's crazy, but to pet owners, it's just normal.
She takes a handful of fur and spins it into a yarn that looks and feels remarkably like wool.
Well, the nice part is it's a legacy from when they've gone. It's something you can look back on that, you know, it's from those particular dogs.
And it's a fashion that may expand beyond the dog or cat fur to include two-legged members of the family.
My son Richard gave me his ponytail when he was 17. I told him that when he's old and bald, I'll give him a beanie of his own hair.
Perhaps it's the start of a growing industry.
Everywhere you look today, China is in the news. But what about the lives behind the stories? How do ordinary Chinese live and work? And does everyone here do kung fu? Life in China answers the questions in your mind when you think of China. Over a billion people and as many stories from all over this vast land. Life in China, bringing you all you need to know about the real Chinese living here in China.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. The idea of autonomous self-drive cars may be attractive, but the recent fatal Tesla accident has highlighted safety concerns. Now, Japanese automaker Nissan has launched a self-drive minivan with toned-down technology. In auto-drive mode, drivers must keep their hands on the wheels and be alert at all times. Here's Spencer Music with this postcard from Japan.
Nissan has unveiled its latest self-driving vehicle. The Serena minivan, equipped with ProPilot technology, relies on a single camera in the back of the driver's rearview mirror. The car can then follow the vehicle ahead, maintaining a safe distance that the driver sets. And it keeps on going on a freeway at a set speed. ProPilot is designed to ease stress on stop-and-go congested roads common in Japan, as well as long drives on clear roads like the interstate highways in the U.S. when a driver might tire and get sleepy. But ProPilot is designed only to help drivers. They must keep their hands on the steering wheel, and an alarm goes off if a sensor on the wheel detects no hands driving. Nissan Deputy General Manager Atsushi Iwaki, a member of ProPilot's development team, explains.
Japanese law does not allow drivers to let go of the steering wheel completely, so I cannot let go. But what I am doing now is that I'm only softly supporting it.
ProPilot is smarter and a bit more glamorous than cruise control, which is already in many vehicles, but for all its help, if you happen to slam on the gas pedal, it won't stop you from crashing into the car you're trailing.
Our focus is not solely on auto-driving, but rather we feel it's best to limit the function to helping the driver. If we were to make it all automatic, safety would not be guaranteed. The driver must assume full responsibility in steering and the speed of the car.
This approach comes amid many concerns about the safety of self-driving cars. Recently in the United States, a Tesla Model S was operating in semi-autonomous autopilot mode when it failed to detect a tractor trailer passing in front of it. It crashed and the driver was killed. Hans Grimmel is the Asia editor of Automotive News. He says safety is a key issue.
Well, safety is obviously a key issue when you're bringing out these new technologies, because some people, some drivers think that this is a cure-all and it completely takes the driving under its own control. In reality, as we saw with the recent Tesla accident, the driver has to remain alert at all times. And that's something that Nissan was very clear about today, that they have to instruct the drivers to remain alert at all times, and that they will warn the driver when the driver is not paying attention.
Some challenges to autonomous capabilities include dealing with bad weather, which may trouble sensors, as well as making sure pedestrians and cyclists are properly detected. But autonomous capability is definitely the future direction, and it's expected to be in millions of cars in the next decade or two.
Oh, yes, I think definitely this is the direction of the industry. Everybody's working on these kind of technologies. So you'll see a gradual evolution of this over the next decade or so, with probably some big advances by 2020.
Nissan, based in Yokohama, is planning autonomous driving for regular city roads by 2020. ProPilot is limited to dealing with the lane that the vehicle is in and on freeways. Some types of limited autonomous car systems are already available on the market in luxury brands. Nissan is keeping ProPilot simple to just one camera to keep the price of the vehicle down at below 3 million yen, which is some $30,000.
The Beijing Hour brings you 60 minutes of comprehensive news and information from China and the rest of the world. We help you through the day with a mix of news, sports, and entertainment. We also bring you in-depth analysis of the day's big stories, as well as the closing numbers from the global market. The Beijing Hour, your very own window on China and the world. Join us here on the Beijing Hour. Let's take a look at the world together.
Listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
North America's highest peak can seem as inaccessible as it is isolated. But every spring, U.S. Army Chinook helicopters thunder into Alaska's interior right up to Denali Slopes to set up base camps for climbers. Here's Nick Lanigan with this postcard from the United States.
For decades, the Army has traversed this range to help the U.S. National Park Service establish base camps for climbers. Three Chinook helicopters the size of city buses can each carry 12.5 tons. These military workhorses are known for their ability to fly fast, carry heavy loads, and reach difficult locations. For climbers and soldiers alike, it's a mutually beneficial relationship. Kirk Donovan is a U.S. Army pilot.
We get the altitude training, get the ability to take the helicopter right to the very limit of what it will and what it will not do. But on top of that, it gets all the guys familiar with the competence and the confidence it takes to fly up there on a regular basis.
The Chinooks deliver potentially life-saving food and medical equipment for two base camps, one at 7,200 feet, the other at 14,000 feet, to assist those attempting to climb the 20,310-foot Denali. Jeffrey Johnson is from Boston on a two-week climbing and skiing trip.
I think it's great what they do. There are a lot of climbers who come here to climb Denali. So I think it's important that there is some infrastructure around that many visitors who come into the range for that reason.
It's valuable training for soldiers who could be deployed on combat missions or disaster relief around the world.
I mentioned Afghanistan, Nepal, those high-altitude places, we are the subject matter experts. So the benefits is that we are the person that they should be calling or would be calling if they needed somebody at those altitudes.
After the last Army helicopter leaves, the climbers settle in atop a remote glacier, and that's when their Denali adventure really begins.
Every Tuesday, Postcards helps you reach across borders without actually taking a trip. With Postcards, the world becomes smaller and more connected. Postcards.
You're listening listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A rapt crowd in Montreal has gathered to see what could be a glimpse of the future, a man in flight. Inventor Alexandre Duru has been showcasing his newest prototype hoverboard, one that he hopes will one day make available to the public. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from Canada. Soaring high above the water, Alexandre Duru flies through the air on a tiny board. Canadian engineer Duru is already the Guinness World Records holder of the longest hoverboard flight. Now he's holding the first public demonstration of his latest prototype board.
I'm sure you've been in an airplane or maybe even in a helicopter. It's even cooler than that because you have almost nothing around you. You really are pretty much flying. The machine is so small, you just feel like you're standing on a board. It's really like surfing in the air.
The board weighs just 30 kilograms, but can support a person weighing up to 70. Made of lightweight composite and powered by lithium batteries, it can fly for about a minute and a half. Duru controls it with a pair of pliers equipped with a sensor and a computerized system that dispatches thrust information to the controllers. Despite having crashed in previous attempts, Duru rides over the water this time with complete confidence as a raft crowd looks on.
The feeling is amazing. It's especially when you see the smile on the people's faces, when you see how everyone else looks at it and they're like, they're thinking, oh, you can see that it makes them happy, and that's amazing to be able to give that kind of feeling to them.
The spectators are all stunned to see Duru hovering over the water.
It's amazing that he can pack that much power into the machine to fly around for that long, too.
It was a really cool flight because nothing broke and he didn't fall in the water.
It's a really impressive machine. It's really awesome. There's no other word for it. I can't wait to try something like this in the future. It looks really fun and it's a very impressive feat of engineering. It's amazing.
Naturally, people are wondering when they might get the chance to have a go.
I'd really like to ride it myself, but I don't know how, I'm not sure how you would, like, use it in public, because you can't really fly over the sidewalks, you know, like, over the water. It's quite nice.
Duru has secured funding from the Canadian government to develop his prototype. His dream is to manufacture the first commercial flying hoverboard and eventually make it available to everyone who wants to fly.
We'll continue to work on that, and I think we'll get somewhere. We'll get to a point where they will actually be able to try it. That's our goal.
With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated, and you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.